Welcome to the Journal Hijabi podcast. I'm your host, Sirin, and here we're all about elevating the voices of hijabi women in mainstream media through authentic storytelling. Without further ado, let's begin the episode.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Journal Hijabi podcast. I'm your host, Sirin. And here, we're all about elevating the voices of hijabi women in mainstream media through authentic storytelling. Today, we have a wonderful guest joining us. Please give a warm welcome to Kira, who embarked on a remarkable journey at the beginning of this year, 2023. Kira is a revert to Islam who started wearing the hijab and describes it among one of her favorite things about herself. What makes Kira's journey even more incredible is the support she received from her Catholic and Christian family, who accepted her decision to revert to Islam. Kira is here with us today to share her hijab story and her incredible journey to Islam. We're thrilled to have Kira as our guest, and we can't wait to delve into her hijab journey and exploration of Islam. So without further ado, let's tune into the episode. Introduce yourself in your own words.
I'm Kira. I 23 reverted a year ago and started wearing a hijab. Basically, I reverted in August, and then I started wearing hijab full-time in January. So it was kind of like, everyone told me that I was moving very quickly, and like my friends who are also Muslim, when I would discuss like that I wanted to start wearing hijab full-time, they actually warned me. They're like, don't push yourself, like you don't need to do everything at once. You know, you don't need to like force yourself to wear it or any of these things. But what was interesting is for me, I know that there's like a lot of discussion and a lot of people do tend to feel like uncomfortable wearing the hijab, or they might have some resistance to wearing it. But for me, that was probably one of the easier things. Like I never felt like, I don't know, I was never conflicted about wearing it. As soon as I was like reading about it, and as soon as I like put it on and started wearing it more, it was like almost like magic a little bit.
Wow.
Where it just made things easier. And the reasons for why I was doing it really helped me. Like obviously I do it for Allah, and so that helped me like be aware of Allah at all times a little bit more. I know like people talk about like hijab as like a physical article of clothing, but it's really also how you carry yourself and how you act as much as what you're wearing. And so by physically wearing like the headscarf, I was able to control my actions more, because in the back of my head, it's like, okay, well, I'm a physical representation of Islam right now. Everybody who's looking at me in public, they're seeing that I am Muslim right now. So I know that there are certain things that I'm like, you can't catch me around it. You can't catch me doing it. You can't, like, none of those things. And so that really also helped me with my journey, because I reverted. There's people talk about like haram, halal, and like as if it's like rules and those sorts of things. And it really kind of helped me because it's like, okay, well, one, here's standards that like as a hijabi, I cannot be seen around. I cannot be seen interacting with and those sorts of things. So already by wearing hijab, it was removing me from situations that I shouldn't have been around in the first place. And then now it's like, well, I don't even participate in certain activities and whatnot. I don't want to get too specific.
Like, the activity. Well, yeah, well, no, we're going to get specific. I mean, I think you have to have a lot to say about hijab, things that are definitely valuable through your lens. And so we can kind of dive into that. So first and foremost, I definitely want to kind of talk about your background, kind of pre-Islam, mm-hmm. Which I think, you know, is essentially like the gateway maybe to your previous experiences into transitioning into a new religion, a new, honestly, person, because put even like, you know, reverting and then having to put on the hijab and then immersing yourself, you know, in new communities and then also, you know, being accepted by your family. And so, you know, despite being raised, you said Catholic and Baptist, and you reverted to Islam last year, the summer of 2022 in August. And you described it as being this difference in almost everything when it comes to your mindset and beliefs on things. They kind of flipped almost like a switch, and then you began to see things with clarity. Can you describe that more?
Yes. And so actually related to that, I was thinking about it actually just earlier today, because I was like, I could finally put my finger on what it was that flip that changed was. And so, you know, I was raised Baptist and Catholic, and mostly Catholic. When I was growing up, we would alternate churches. One Sunday we'd go to Catholic church, the next Sunday we'd go to Baptist church. And then eventually we just started going to Catholic church. And then eventually my family became like they call it like Christmas Easter church, where you go on Christmas, you go on Easter, but like for the rest of the year, you're not really going. I guess like the equivalent is people who only go to the masjid on Ramadan. But the biggest difference and what that switch was that flipped is, I think it's taqwa. I think that's the Arabic word for it, but like the awareness of Allah at all times. That was not present before. And it's not really like you're taught like God's with you all the time. God's like there all the time. And those sorts of things. You're taught that in Christianity, but you're taught it in a way where it's like told to you, but you're not, there's nothing for you to really understand that in Christianity. Like you don't feel it. You don't, I guess, what's the word? You don't like, it's not like there deep in your heart where like God's around you all the time, God's with you all the time. And I think one, a big part of that is prayer. Even from like just being aware of what time it is at all times. So, you know, if you have prayed on time, if you've like hit your prayer, if you've, and you have to be aware of like what time it is at all the times, at least for me, because I'm like, okay, you know, it's Dhuhr time right now, but I got asked coming up, what time is that? So I can be aware. And so I can like make sure I'm not doing anything and can get my prayer. Like already you are putting, like you are refocusing your lens onto making things about God, about Allah, in a way that it's not really done in Christianity. In Christianity, it's kind of like, I guess the way you can live your life is you can wake up at whatever time you want and you can kind of do what you want for the most part. I know now this is a difference in different groups of Christianity. Some people are like very strong, like original sin sort of deal. So everyone's kind of bad, but then also there's some groups of Christianity where it's like, well, Jesus died for our sins, putting air quotes, Jesus died. And so now we're all good as long as you believe in God and you believe in Jesus and those sorts of things. So it doesn't put responsibility on you to be a good person. And so that's, I also think, is like a big thing, is one is like you are constantly aware of God, of Allah, because you have to be. Like, there's, I feel like it's really difficult to be Muslim and to do the practices that we're supposed to be doing and not be constantly aware if you're doing it the right way. Just by principle, like, you, like, when I put on hijab, I'm constantly like, why am I wearing hijab? Because of Allah. So that's a constant reminder. Praying, constant reminder, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Then also the responsibility of your actions being on yourself and not on Adam or Eve or Jesus or any of that. It's on yourself. And so now mm-hmm. you have to be aware of your actions, like down to even stepping into the bathroom with your left foot. Yeah. And those sorts of things. It's a higher sense of awareness of God that mm-hmm. almost changes your actions without you even realizing that it's changing your actions.
Oh, definitely. I mean, having the hijab, you know, on every time you go out, it's not only like a public service announcement, but it's even like a reminder to you, like you said, like it's always just the remembrance of kind of who you are, the modesty representing essentially, you know, the religion, although that can feel like sometimes very hard, you know, to carry or to handle. And so really, I have it for myself, you know, as that reminder. It makes me a better person. And kind of go back to what you were saying, like, you know, I didn't even plan on talking about this, but when you kind of mentioned the thing about, okay, well, Jesus died for our sins, I was actually thinking about that the other day. And I was like, you know, I've came across some people that essentially have a mindset that they are promised heaven. You know, that I don't know if it's Christians. I don't really know what their background is or Catholic, but it's like, okay, you know, well, Jesus like died for my sins. And so like, I can just like live my life. And it's like, well, how do you know that you're promised heaven? Like, how does that work? If you know that when you pass away, you're going to heaven, then it's honestly like, what's the point of living if you already know what grade you're going to get on the test, if you're already going to get an A, you know? So,
and then also what's preventing you from like, I don't know how to word it, because I feel like it might be.
So being a better person, really.
Yeah, like what's making you be a better person, and what's stopping you from being a terrible person? Because with that mindset of, and it's a huge, it's something that I do see with like a lot of Christianity, and especially with, you know, current events that are happening right now. I'm seeing it more and more, where it's like, we're promised heaven, so it doesn't matter what we do, because you think you're in the right, you think you're on the right side automatically, and you don't take the time to look at your actions and assess, like, is this actually good? And I actually kind of have example about this. So the biggest thing I can think about is like alcohol, right? And in Catholicism, like, actually we take communion, and part of communion is wine, right? So that's just kind of to exemplify that, like, drinking is not seen as something negative in Christianity. In fact, it's either seen as neutral or like people just generally really like drinking, right? Obviously, we know in Islam that alcohol is haram and it's from the devil. But for me, when I was Christian and I was told like alcohol is haram, my brain was like, why? Like, just generally curious why. But it took all of like 2 seconds of thinking about it to be like, oh, this is why. It causes this, it causes this, it causes like all these health issues, all these, like, it changes your actions in so many ways. Like, it takes like 2 seconds worth of actually thinking about what the problem with alcohol is to be like, oh, that makes more than, like, it makes more than total sense why it's wrong.
Yeah.
But if you're from the perspective of thinking that you're right about the issue, then you're going to find something wrong with, like, you're not, first of all, you're not going to think about it being bad for you, because you're like, oh, for Christians, because they're allowed to drink, oh, I'm allowed to do it, so I'm not even going to think about like the negative consequences of drinking.
Mm-hmm. We're just here to have a good time.
We're just here to have mentality. Yeah, you know, good time, not long time, those sorts of things. And so it's like you're not even thinking about things that are really so detrimental to you, to your health, to your mental well-being, to so many parts of your life, even just in this life. Like, that's not even talking about like the hereafter. So you just don't even think about it. But then it's so obvious at the same time. But because you're in an environment where you're like, Jesus died for my sins, so I'm going to get into heaven, it doesn't matter what you do, because you're going to get into heaven, and that's what you're told.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that I thought that way, but I think it's a very easy mindset to have. And I think, you know, that's the beauty of Islam, is that, you know, we find the beauty in the suffering, the point of suffering. I think that life, the point of life is suffering, because through that you can become the most human version that you are, and you get to like just feel your soul. And I think, you know, after that suffering that you go through, I think it develops you into a stronger person and a stronger human being to be able to tackle the hardships of life. It's like, if you don't suffer, then it's like, I don't think you learn. You know, I learn more from failure than success. And I think our religion is really surrounded by kind of that ideology of suffering, but knowing that there's light at the end of the tunnel, knowing that, you know, there's a reason that you suffer. You're not just suffering just to be tortured, that there's going to be a great reward after it. And that's, you know, how you're tested. So, I mean, you know, kind of going back to your personal story, to reverting to Islam. So, you know, share with us like the remarkable journey of your reversion to Islam. Take us back to August 2022. What were the key factors that influenced this significant decision in your life? And how did your family respond to this pivotal moment?
So we actually got to go back a little further than August.
Oh yeah. Starts before that.
It does start before that. So like I said, I was raised Baptist and Catholic, and you know, I was going through a really rough period of my time at this point, or a like really rough period in my life at this point. And like I said, I was raised Catholic. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to like search for God. I'm really going to put in all this effort to like really connect with God. So for me, that was going to church. And at the time, this is what, 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago, Lent, which is like the Catholics, like for Catholicism, it's 30 days before Easter. It's not the same as Ramadan, but the ideas are the same. You fast. You don't like fast in terms of like complete food and water fasting, but you do like give something up and you do fast for that period of time. On Fridays, you can't eat any meat, but you can have fish and those sorts of things. So, and then you also like go to church a lot more, and it all leads up to Easter. So it was happened right before Ramadan that year. So I'm going to church. I am like fasting in the Catholic way and doing all these things. And like something's just not sitting right with me. And at the time I had a friend who's Muslim who, so that's important for this later, because we're talking about religion. Him and I were talking about religion at the time. But one thing that really stuck with me is one time I went to church, and in Catholic church, they have this thing where it's the homily, where you basically, the priest reads the gospel, a story from the gospel, and then he gives his interpretation of that chapter or verses in the Bible, right? So it was the verses that he was talking about were some of, like, it was one of my favorite stories, which where it's basically the story of Jesus. Someone's coming up to him because there's this adulteress, and they're like, we need to stone her. We need to stone her. And Jesus basically says, those without sin cast the first stone. Basically, if you are sinless, then yes, you can like attack this woman, but all of us have sins, right? But the priest's interpretation of this beautiful story was to repeatedly say, and I'm going to quote the words, see Jesus's face as he's loving you. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with what you just told us about the story.
What does that mean? What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. I don't have an explanation for what that means. But that was kind of like the nail in the coffin for Catholicism for me. At the same time, I had been going and I'd been looking at the Bible and the Torah and comparing them, specifically the Old Testament, because I knew the Old Testament was supposed to come from the Torah. And I was finding mistranslations. I was finding like changing things so that the meaning would be different. Like there were so many things I was finding. I was like inconsistent between the two. And already I like history, so I already could like list out some of the changes that the Bible has undergone, even in recent times. So I'm like, okay, none of this is sitting right with me. It's changed too many times. Like people write it. Like we don't have an original Bible text from the time of Jesus. Like there's too many things that aren't sitting right with me. So then Ramadan happens. And like I said, I was talking to my friend about religion at this point. So he invites me to go with his family to the masjid for Ramadan. Honestly, I should have just reverted then. Like I was sold, honestly, after the first time that I prayed. It was like everything that I had been looking for when I was searching for God. All of my answers were questioned the second that I went into sujood. Like that was it. I was sold completely.
That's beautiful
at that point. And it's crazy because I had been searching so hard, and it's something that I feel like people who are born Muslim or people who I guess like people, I think feel like this is something that uniquely reverts my understand, is searching so hard for God and then him just revealing himself to you in that manner is something that's like unmatched. And it really helps me with like understanding a lot of like the being aware of God, and because I know what it's like to be without, not without because God's always there, but to not have God as an active part of my life. I know what it's like to be blind, I guess. And that's like not something that I ever want ever again. And so it's like pushes me to strive to be like the best Muslim that I can, because I know what it's like to be blind, and I know what it's like to like be Muslim and to see everything, and the difference is like unmatched. And I don't even think I could like list out every single difference that there is, because there's just so many. Sorry, my cat is losing his mind in the background.
It's fine, they're a third guest. But you know, that's really beautiful to hear. I'm like, I was like at a loss of words. I'm like, I don't even know what to say. You know, that's probably how you felt in the moment.
Yeah.
So like, what was kind of, describe those feelings that were kind of like going on in your body. Was it like kind of, and this was August 2022 or before that?
Yeah, you went to the masjid? This was actually the Ramadan before August 2022.
Okay. So it's kind of, you know, I mean, I think that's the best, you know, time that you could see the Muslim community of it, like getting together and kind of the festivities. So I think that's maybe also what kind of led you to have those like immense feelings of seeing that community and be like, oh my God, like looking there, looking here, looking at the people. Is that kind of maybe something that you haven't experienced in your previous religions?
So I will say this, and this is something that like, when I say this to people who are not Muslim, they don't believe me. but it's just facts, and it's the most true thing I could ever say. The Muslim community is unequivocally the kindest, most open-hearted, most open like community that you could ever engage with. Unequivocally, like there's no other group that can even compare to like the kindness that I've received from the Muslim community, from the open-heartedness I've received from the Muslim community, from the understanding, from the like the generosity is unmatched. Like every, like if you were to put a list of like good qualities that you could have, I'm positive like the Muslim community is like, they're hitting every mark above and beyond even like the next closest group. I don't even know what the next closest group would be, but
I mean, it's like, one of the fastest growing religions in the world. I guess that's for a reason.
Yeah.
Coincidence.
And honestly, like when people like, because I've had people like ask me questions about Islam because I wear hijab, which is like, I love that. Mm-hmm. When people have a negative perception of Muslims, it tells me right away that they've never actually interacted with Muslims, because that's just, it's just like all you have to do is like walk into a masjid and you, first, your heart will fill up with warmth, like straight up. Mm-hmm. And the people, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter man, woman, or child, like the people are going to be there. They're like, they help you out. I remember when I first started going to the masjid, I was like a deer in headlights sometimes, because like I'd go into the masjid and there's all these people and I don't know where I'm going, I don't know what I'm doing, and I was like deer in headlights. But every single time people are coming up to me, they're helping me, they're asking me if I understand, like they are going above and beyond for me, a total stranger, right? So the community does have like a lot to do with it, but I think it's kind of like, of course the community would be like this because of the teachings of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and what's in the Quran.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when you mentioned about like the people that usually have false narratives about Islam are the people that like know nothing about it, or, and I kind of laughed in that moment because, you know, living in Texas in a southern like conservative state, we have like these small towns where Islam or hijabis don't exist. There's like not one, this person has not seen a hijab in their lifetime. And so you'll get like these stares, you know, like walking into places like, let's say, Texas Roadhouse. You know, I like Texas Roadhouse, but like the stares, it's so sad to me that, like, you know, I used to be so scared of it. Like, so I would say, like, maybe I wouldn't say intimidated, but like
they would stare.
They, yeah, like they would stare at you, gaze at you for like long periods of time, and it's like they will make you feel uncomfortable. So it's like, I mean, it's sad because like I've gotten used to it, but it's like the more, you know, maybe I'm the first hijabi that they've seen in their lifetime. So that can like open up to maybe like new questions or having a conversation. So, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. But you know, like I said, in different environments, people have different experiences.
Yeah.
So kind of going to my favorite part of this episode, which we're talking about the hijab. So you've described the hijab to be among the most favorite things about yourself. And you particularly said, my experience with the hijab has been different from others that I have met, particularly reverts, because I put on the hijab so quickly. Can you explain that more?
Yeah. So for me, like wearing the hijab was something I was more than excited to do. It was, like I said earlier, it wasn't an inner battle for me. It was basically like, as soon as I figured it out, I was like, all right, bet. I'm gonna wear this every day for the rest of my life. No sweat. type of deal. Obviously I still have like issues with like proper hijab. Like sometimes I might wear makeup, those sorts of things. But in terms of like wearing the hijab, I feel like I hear a lot of narrative of it's difficult, of people who are like unsure about wearing it, and they might have reservations about wearing it. That I did not have. Other people had reservations for me. I did not have a single reservation for myself. I was like,
when you say other people, is that like other Muslim hijabis?
Yeah, other Muslim hijabis, other non-Muslim people, other Muslim people who didn't wear hijab. Like, kind of like every group was like, are you sure? You don't have to do that. And it was like, what surprised me was people saying like, you don't have to do it. Like, it's not right now. Mm-hmm. And that a little bit rubbed me the wrong way, because I was like, first of all, yes, I do have to do this. It's a requirement upon me. But even outside of that, I'm not like, trust me when I say I'm not rushing myself. If I was like, trust me when I say, if I could have worn this like 3 months ago, if I was aware, I probably would have, you know. And I grew up, and here's the thing, it was a very significant change for me, and as it is for everybody. Like I said, I grew up non-Muslim. I was actually on the cheer team for my school prior to being Muslim. So, and you know, I'm a girl who grew up in the West. I participated in all parts of Western life. And those sorts of things, going out, concerts, and so like that was my closet. And so I guess the biggest difficulty was trying to turn my closet, which was not modest by anybody's standards, into proper for hijab, and into like, I'm actually still getting rid of clothes that I had before, because it was just like, there's nothing I can do with these clothes now for myself, except for give them away, because I can't wear them. And I won't, I don't want to say I can't, I won't wear them, because it's a choice. But so I see a lot of like people struggling with this. And for me, it's like among the most beautiful things that I could be doing. And it's like among the most beautiful thing that I could be wearing. Like, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing. If I don't have like a hijab on top of it, I don't feel like the outfit's complete. I don't feel like like, it's just, it's not the vibe. Also, it does not hurt that it's like less hair maintenance.
That doesn't say 15-20 minutes every morning.
Yeah, seriously. But I love my hijab so much. Like, it's something that I would never ever want to take off. And it's kind of nice, because then I like to do cute little hairstyles. Like, I'll do for myself, like, cute little buns with like twists and everything and whatnot. That I'll like wear out around the house, around my family. And then I like to do that and then cover it and put on my hijab, because I feel beautiful. Because I know, first of all, my hair is cute. Not that anybody could see it, but my hair is cute for myself. And then it's covered, which makes me feel like more special, because it's like, my hair's cute but you can't see it, which I don't know if it's like the right way to think about it.
Well, I think there's like both sides. It's like, there's some people that see it as like, you know, for lack of better words, like essentially a tease, you know, like, just show it to me, just take it off, which is wrong, you know. Yeah. And then there's people who are like, okay, well, calm down. First of all, I wear it for myself. You know, you don't have to please anyone else except yourself, and you're allowed to, like, you know, feel that way. And I think hair care is very important when wearing the hijab too.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say how I think is like more of a tease. It's more of like, to myself, it's like, I know my hair is
cute, lack of better words. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think like that I wear it for myself is like such a big thing about it. And like, because people always talk about, like, I've heard so many people say like, my body, my choice, right? And I hear my body, my choice when it's wear which as little as you want, my body, my choice, where it comes to birth control or any of those sorts of things. But what's interesting is, hold on, my cat just opened my door, give me 1 second. Yeah. What's interesting is the only time I haven't gotten the typical narrative about my body, my choice, is when I decided to wear hijab. When I decided to wear hijab, I had people who were concerned, and they were like, and they would bring up like what's happening with girls in Afghanistan being forced to wear it. And I'm like,
or Iran.
No. Or Iran, yeah. And just being forced to wear it, right? And it's like, okay, so if we can agree that forcing somebody to wear it is a bad thing, why can't we agree that forcing somebody to not wear it is also a bad thing? Because it's not about what you're wearing. It's about people trying to control what you're wearing. I'm choosing to wear this. So it's still my body, my choice, if you want to go that route.
Oh, definitely. And if they want to go deeper in that route, I mean, here in the West, they capitalize off of women's bodies. It's like you say, my body, my choice. Ma'am, there are corporations making money. It's like you make a living off of showing your body. And I'm not shaming any woman or anybody. You look good, feel good. But it's like, for me, you know, I do that for myself. I don't need men, you know, in America, or corporations, people in America, to capitalize off of that in the name of my body, my choice, my freedom. And, you know, it should go both ways. Like, why am I over here? You're trying to make me feel guilty for choosing not to be capitalized off of my body. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And anyone can do it, honey. Anybody can do it. But not everyone chooses to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. So yeah, that's what I have to say about that. So,
and it's also like ridiculously difficult. Like, I don't know. To me, yeah, it is absolutely insane how difficult it is to find and purchase like hijab standard modest clothes. I'm specifically saying like hijab standard
that are affordable. There are, they exist,
but
like $1,000.
All I'm looking for is a regular crew neck, long sleeve shirt. Neck. That's all I need. I don't want cuts on it. I don't want it to be a crop top. I don't want it to have weird designs. Give me a plain long sleeve shirt or long sleeve dress that's crew neck.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's like an extremely difficult ask.
Yeah. And I think, you know, some Muslim women in hijabis have like recognize that issue and went on to create kind of clothing brands that address that issue in modesty. But I think we've kind of yet to have figured out, you know, on a large scale, how to have them on the market, you know, more affordable, you know, yeah, to hijabis. It's like still kind of capitalizing off of the struggle of hijabis. I think it's like very wrong. But, you know, on the topic of the hijab, you mentioned how surprisingly, you know, dressing in modesty changes so many things in your life. Not only do people start treating you differently in both good and bad ways, you start to see yourself differently, and it becomes easier to hold yourself to a higher standard. And I agree with that. So why do you think that that's kind of changed, like in dressing differently, you kind of started to see yourself, to hold yourself to kind of higher standards? Why do you think so?
Well, one, like I said, I'm very aware that I'm a representation of Islam when I'm wearing hijab. And Islam for me is like, it's priority number one. Like, there's everything comes after Islam. And that's like a whole different conversation. That's something that people who aren't Muslim, they don't get that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But Islam for me is priority number one. I would have nothing if not for Islam. I mean, I would have nothing if not for Allah. But, you know, by being Muslim, by following Islam, I am doing the best I can to be worthy of everything that Allah has given me. So I don't want to do anything that's going to detract or make people think of Islam in a negative way, or even to make people think that, like, I don't want to quote unquote like dilute the faith, So I don't want people to see me doing something that is not within the bounds of Islam and being like, oh, well, she's wearing hijab and she's doing this, so that must mean it's okay in Islam. Like, I want to be a good example for others. So that's like even in the public sphere. And that's like when I'm out publicly wearing it. But even for myself, being aware of it when I'm in public, it really got my mind used to thinking about these things, especially like when I'm in private, because now I'm afraid I don't want to be a hypocrite. So I don't want to like go and have this entire persona outside and then come inside and like do all these things. So now I'm scared for myself and my hereafter. I don't want to be a hypocrite. So I'm going to hold myself to a higher standard that I feel I need to be at. And so that's kind of like one way in which the hijab has like helped me hold myself to a higher standard.
Yeah. Do you think there's pressure that comes with that?
There's pressure that comes from me for that, because I'm like the kind of person where I don't want to do something if I'm not doing it well. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't like doing things I'm not good at. And so I'm going to like do my best to be good at Islam, at submitting to Allah. So there's internal pressure, but I wouldn't say that it's like coming from anyone specifically.
I see. Yeah, I mean, it can kind of serve as like a motivating factor for yourself of like remembering that you wear it and then holding yourself to that standard. And it just continues to, I think, make you a better human being, you know,
yeah,
day by day. Can you share with us how your experiences and interactions with others have evolved before and after wearing the hijab? And, you know, I'm curious to understand why you might feel it might have been more manageable to uphold certain principles and standards as a Muslim, especially in comparison to your earlier upbringing in a Catholic and Baptist background.
So I'm going to answer the second part of the question first, just because it is related to the rest of the question. But you specifically asked like how like wearing hijab would make it more like would help me to uphold like the standards of Islam better than before. And so I've like two kind of stories that kind of come in with that. And so we know that like charity and being generous is like a requirement for Islam. We have to like pay our zakat, but also just in general, we should be generous people, right? Specifically because I wear hijab, I've had people who come up to me and they say, hello, sister. And then they ask for like whatever help that they may need. Specifically because I'm wearing hijab, these people are coming up to me because they understand that it's part of Islam to be generous and to help people out, those who are in need. Mm-hmm. And so already that's like an example of like the hijab being a way in which I'm like the hijab being a reason that I'm better to, that I'm able to more better exemplify what Islam is supposed to be and to practice Islam in a better way. But because these people are coming up to me asking for me to be generous with them because they see that I'm wearing hijab. So they have that understanding of Islam, of generosity. And that's like a way in which they do it, because that's, I mean, I've had people like people who are homeless who come and they ask for whatever they need, like my whole life, just because if you live in an area where there's homeless people, that's just going to happen. But when I wear hijab, like these people are coming to me, not just it's, I don't know. It's like a little different. It's not just someone who's like, hello, like, can I have some cash? It's more of like, it's one, it's a more personable sort of conversation to know that they're coming to me because I'm wearing hijab. And how I very much look at it is as Allah is providing for these people through me, especially when people are coming up to me because I'm wearing hijab. And they've like said as such to me, they're like, oh, I know that Muslims like donate and whatnot, so that's why I'm coming up to you. And so like Allah is providing for these people through me, and through like me wearing hijab, these people are finding me And that, like, that gives a better image of Islam for other people who are non-Muslims. And that also, like, I love being a beacon. Like, I love being, like, physically, like, people can look to me and to see and think that they can get help from me. I love that people have that perception of hijabis. And I want to do everything I can to maintain that perception, because that's, like, who I am in my heart. I will help anybody who comes to help me with help or who needs help. So that this hijab is, like, almost like a beacon of you can come to me and I will help you is one of, like, my favorite parts about Islam, about not Islam, but about the hijab. And then in terms of how my interactions have changed with people from before and after, I actually did an experiment about this, a kind of experiment, where I did the experiment before I was wearing hijab full time. So in, like, that August before January type of thing. At the time I was living in Baltimore, and I think, like, location has a big thing to do with it. But people are like, chivalry is dead. Chivalry is not dead if you're wearing hijab, because the amount of times that, like, there's literally every time I go to a gas station, I don't open the door myself. And it's not me being, like, waiting for someone to open the door, but, like these people are opening the door.
Wait, you're saying, with the hijab, people will become more,
like, they're just so much more respectful.
Chivalent? What is the word? Chivalent?
Chivalrous.
Chivalrous? Do you think that?
That has been my
Because I feel that way too. I just didn't know kind of that, you know, it was a thing, like, to put in words. Like, you kind of just, like, I guess hijabis, like, collectively feel it. I guess it's like a sense of respect.
Yeah.
You know, like, definitely that comes with it. It's crazy.
Like, people are, like, way more respectful to me. And now that this is about men, but specifically men are, like, super respectful. They open the door. I had, so I'm back down in Richmond, which isn't as south as Texas. I'll give it that, but it's got its southern qualities. I had someone who's wearing, like, a cowboy hat, like, tip his hat for me. I've never seen that except in movies.
in Virginia?
In Virginia.
Yeah. Because I've seen that happen. Because if you said that was Texas, I wouldn't believe you. Because, yeah, that definitely happens. Yeah.
But, like, and, like, just, there's a lot more respect. And there's, like, because I don't like setting boundaries with people, because I feel like, and this is a me thing, I don't like being mean to people. So if I feel like I'm being mean, I don't like to do it. But it's, like, hijab has boundaries in place.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't need to set. Like, I don't need to tell you that as a man, like, I'm not gonna hug you if you're a guy. I don't look at what I'm wearing and you probably know I'm not gonna do that.
It's crazy because, you know, like you said, yeah, like, the hijab outwardly, it comes with boundaries, but in my experience, I'm like, sometimes people here, you know, with the non, like, hijabi or Muslim background, they still don't really understand or see that boundary. Like, I've been offered alcohol. I've been offered, you know, alcohol multiple times, like, just assuming, like, yeah, we're going to go to bars. We're going to bar hop. Like, I had a friend tell me, let's go bar hopping.
That's crazy.
You know? That's crazy. So I don't know if I'm, like, the only hijabi that, like, experienced that, or if it's, like, a Texas thing, or, you know, if you have, like, American friends. Like, yeah, the hijab, like, it can display a sense of boundaries, but it's also, like, in my experience, not to also assume that everybody's going to understand that boundary. So sometimes you have to, like, state it, you know, state it from the beginning, so you don't, you know, you go riding in the car with your friend and you end up at a bar and it's, like, you know, too late. So it's, like, in my experience, it's, like, like you said, that it states the boundaries, but sometimes you have to, like, outwardly state that.
Yeah, that is true. That you do, like, especially, like, with handshaking. That's my experience. Like, but I usually, by the time I go like this, people are like, "Oh, you're probably not gonna shake."
Yeah. I mean, I think in my community, like, you know, yes, Texas is, like, conservative, but, like, in my specific city, you know, it's it's still very diverse, and even my university is super diverse. I jokingly call it Hijabi University because I genuinely see like so many hijabis like everywhere I turn, everywhere I go, which is like amazing to kind of like be in that environment, have that environment of like also living in America, living in the West, but still have a lot of people that look like me and are Muslim and are hijabis. And I think that's, you know, really puts me at an advantage about like hijab in the Western experience. And so, you know, but of course still having like empathy of like not all people have those communities and outlets to be able to fully express themselves as hijabis.
Yeah. So when I actually reverted, I was living in Maryland around Baltimore. And so there's quite a few Muslims there. And so I feel like the pockets of Texas, from what I've heard about Texas, the pockets of Texas that have a lot of Muslims are like higher in population than on the East Coast. Actually, I'm going to take that back because I think New York is pretty heavy.
There is a lot in New York.
There's a lot in New York. But in, for example, in Virginia, where I'm at now, there's like, at my school, there's like a couple hijabis, like maybe three.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like this specific high school that I went to, it was still like hijabi high school, Muslim high school. But I've also had hijabi friends that went to a different high school that their experience was very different in that they were like the only hijabi, you know, at that high school. So it definitely differs from like city to city, I guess zip code to zip code, and kind of seeing those differences is like very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting. Right now, like I said, I'm not like the only hijabi, but I'm like one of a few. And because I go to a different school for events and like to get in contact with other Muslims, it doesn't bother me so much. And I kind of like it in the sense of people ask me questions about Islam at my school. Like I had a student like come up and just ask me, she was like, oh, I mean, she asked me about hijab specifically. She's like, why do you wear it? Are you forced to wear it? Those sorts of things, kind of like the stereotypes, which like, yes, those are stereotypical questions. And those are like not good assumptions to have, but I don't mind answering those questions because it's not her fault that that's what she thinks about Islam. Somebody taught that to her. So I have no problem dispelling that myth that people have.
Yeah.
But it's also difficult to be like the only like, or one of a few hijabis, because then it's like,
you're the spokesperson. You're like the news anchor for that school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that can be kind of difficult. Well, thank you for joining me today, Kira. This was, I think, an amazing conversation that we had that I specifically learned so much about that I didn't know about reverts and wearing the hijab for the first time. And I think that the insight that you had was so valuable and important. And I just love to hear what you had to say about your own personal journey. And I hope that our listeners can feel the same way too. But I do want to ask if there's anything else that maybe I didn't ask that you wanted to answer. Like any question that maybe I didn't mention that you wanted to like discuss on here.
Well, I do want to touch on one thing very quickly. This goes out to like people who specifically are like reverts or like nervous with their parents. Like I said, I reverted in August. I didn't start wearing hijab full time in January. Now that January is also when I told my parents that I was Muslim to begin with. So like they got full time hijab and then a Muslim at the same time. I was terrified. But what you think your parents' reaction is going to be 95% of the time is not what your parent, it's way worse than what your parents' reaction actually is going to be. And so like for me, I guess message to reverts, don't necessarily be unless it's like a legitimate danger to your life, because I know sometimes it can get like that for some people, which is very unfortunate, but that is, I recognize that is the case sometimes. But if your parents are like generally like you get along with your parents, I promise you they're not going to be as mad as you think that they are going to be. Because my parents were surprisingly, I was very surprised at how like very chill they were.
I was surprised when you mentioned that. I was surprised because, like, you know, in my experience, like maybe having like revert friends or people talk about the story, not always was their family's response like accepting or understanding of that decision. And I've heard a lot of reverts, you know, having to maybe leave the house or just feeling odd, or that they really like just have to like hide themselves. I think maybe that's just what's really portrayed more than the positive side. So I guess it really just depends on like the family that you have, but I think it's great that, you know, that was your experience and that we get to share, you know, this positive experience with people to know that it's not always negative. And like you said, of being nervous to mention it, if it's like something that you're so sure about and it's like in your heart and you've done your research and you just like feel it, you know, like forever, like this is just truly who you are, you know, I think that it would be sad for your family not to like accept that. And, you know, if they don't, I don't know what you would do in that situation, but there's definitely resources with mosques and people that I think will always support you on that journey.
Oh, for sure. Oh my gosh. I got to shout out my masjid because they've been awesome. They like,
what's your masjid?
Right now I go to, it's the Muslim Community Center of Chesterfield.
In Virginia.
Yeah, it's in Virginia, but they've been amazing. Also, Islamic Society of Baltimore, that's where I took my Shahada and where I spent the first until I moved back home. Lots of events, super, super helpful. Amazing community there. A huge community there. They've got like massive community, but yeah, people... Like, I was so nervous to tell my parents, especially my grandparents, who are, like, devout Catholic. They went to Catholic school growing up. My grandmother's brother's a priest. I was terrified to tell them. But they were literally like, oh, good for you. But I think also it's an understanding that, like they're Catholics, but, like, they have an understanding of, like, it's the same God. We're supposed, like, it's the same rules, it's the same God. They just don't have an understanding of what Islam, mm-hmm. all of it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kira, I think that I can definitely talk to you about this in a second or third episode. There's like a lot to discuss. So hopefully we'll just continue this conversation moving forward. And I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was so nice talking to you.
Thanks for reaching the end of the episode. We hope you learned something new about the women who wear the hijab. You can watch the recorded video of this episode on YouTube at Journal Hijabi. And be sure to follow our Instagram at Journal Hijabi to stay updated on all things hijabi and help spread our stories. Until next time, never forget the power of being a hijabi.